This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The confusion, accusations, suits, and countersuits surrounding the Florida recount has a lot of Americans wondering if it's time to reform the election system. My guest, Robert Pastor, has witnessed elections around the world. He established the election monitoring system for the Carter Center and for 13 years worked with monitoring teams in Latin America, the Caribbean, the Middle East, and China. During the Carter administration, he served on the National Security Council. Pastor is a professor of political science at Emory University in Atlanta. I spoke with him early this morning. How worried are you by what you're seeing? You've seen people try to steal elections around the world, and you've tried to prevent that from happening. Do you think that we're in a crisis point in how this recount is being handled in the United States? Are you concerned that part of our democracy is breaking down?
I'm not concerned at all. In fact, I think in some ways this is the finest moment for America. We have discovered that in a very close election, we have a system of procedures. We have people who are actively engaged, who are volunteering their work, who are working very hard to make sure this process comes to completion. We have an independent judiciary, which we all respect. So I'm not concerned about it for the United States. I think in other countries that I've observed, this is a moment in which riots often break out. I was in one country in which the Election Commission was almost burned down during the count. I don't think we have any reason to be concerned about that in the United States. On the contrary, I think this should be an opportunity not only to be patient and watch the process work, but I also hope that it's an opportunity for Americans to think hard about ways that we can improve this system so that we can avoid these particular problems, as well as other problems that have emerged during this very long and expensive campaign. And we can think hard about what kinds of reforms we need to prevent these kinds of problems from occurring again.
You have seen warring parties be very suspicious of each other in foreign countries where you've monitored elections. How do you think the Democrats and the Republicans have been handling themselves in this really close election as they watch each other during the recount in Florida, as they watch each other during all the suits and the countersuits?
Elections are a process by which competing parties and candidates struggle for power. And once you keep that in mind, you understand why the heat between the parties is likely to be very intense during every phase of the process, particularly during the counting phase. So I'm not at all surprised by the partisanship between the two leading parties. One would expect that. The critical question is whether you can insulate that partisanship from the counting process and the judicial process. And I believe that our system permits that and does have certain walls that will separate the partisan debate from the actual resolution of these particular disputes.
One of the questions about partisanship revolves around Catherine Harris, the Secretary of State in Florida, who co-chaired George W. Bush's election campaign in that state. Is it typical in states, do you think, for somebody who is clearly that partisan to be in a Secretary of State type of position where you're supervising part of the election and deciding when the count is ready to be certified?
It is typical that Secretaries of State in most states are aspiring politicians. It's unfortunate, however, that particular job and the kind of people that are encouraged to run for that office is viewed as partisan. I believe this is still one more of the problems that we ought to resolve in the future. The person in each state who should be charged with the conduct of elections should be a person that's seen above politics, not as an aspiring politician.
How do you think they should be chosen? I mean, in politics tend to choose people who share their political point of view.
I think we ought to reevaluate the way we look at the electoral process. We've taken the entire process for granted for far too long. But now we understand that the conduct of elections is at least as important as the regulation of our money or the resolution of disputes. And therefore, we should think about choosing our senior election officials much as we choose our judges or we choose the chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank. These individuals are seen as above politics, and they're above politics in part because of the process by which they're selected. which is usually that they're nominated by one side or the other, but they need to be approved and confirmed by both parties. And the only way that occurs is if everybody sees them as above politics. Secondly, their term of office should exceed that of the political mandate. In the state, in the states, for example, they should exceed the term of the governor, so that their time horizon is much broader, and they think of the broader state and national interest as opposed to the interest of the party in power.
Let's look at the butterfly ballot, the controversial ballot that was used in Palm Beach County, in which some of the names were to some of the punches were to the left of the name, and others were to the right of the name in the opposing column. And a lot of people say that they meant to vote for Gore Lieberman and inadvertently, because the ballot was confusing, voted for Patrick Buchanan. Any opinion of the design, having worked with elections and ballots around the world?
The design makes a big difference. I have to say that I don't recall an instance in which a national election was designed by a local official. I think this is a case of where our system is so excessively decentralized that a particular county can make such a decision, and that decision could affect the entire country. It would seem to me that at the minimum, a national commission should design the ballot for the presidency. Obviously, the ballots for local and state officials need to be designed at different levels, but at least at the national level, there should be one single design.
You've said that the absentee ballot system is the part of the electoral system that has the biggest problems with fraud. Why is that so?
That's because I think the political parties can play a major role in both getting the absentee ballots and having voters vote for them. There are cases, of course, in which the parties themselves or certain individuals were able to fill out the absentee ballots themselves. And, of course, that is blatant fraud. The biggest problem, of course, is that the essence of a free election is a secure and secret vote. And that's not possible with an absentee ballot. Or to put it differently, I think an absentee ballot is not quite so secure. A person might very well vote in the presence of others. Somebody might vote for that person. So there are many different areas in which the absentee ballot could be misused. And in part because of the history of absentee ballot fraud in Florida, the Florida State Legislature within the last few years have passed a law which sets a whole sets a large number of requirements that must be met before the ballot could be considered valid. And many of these requirements, such as witnessing of the vote by a separate individual, the use of the voter registration number, the specific signature must match the signature that's on hand at the registration office. There are a whole set of regulations which, if they are not precisely implemented, would lead to the declaration of the ballot as being invalid. And so you have two different sets of problems. One is the traditional use of the absentee ballot in the case of possible use of fraud, and the other is whether it stands up to all of the additional requirements that are that have been put in place.
If you were given the job of reforming the American election system, where would you start?
Well, there are many different places in which the American electoral system needs to be reformed. From the nature of the machines that we use, to the design of the ballot, to the excessive decentralization in which individual counties can make decisions that affect a people's right to vote for a president. There is partisanship at different moments in the electoral process where there should not be. Our campaigns go on for far too long. They're far too expensive, making it too open for special interests to control the process. Our Federal Election Commission does not function very effectively. Our Electoral College right now is an obsolete, archaic system in which people do not have the opportunity to directly elect their president. There are so many different things that need to be corrected that one hopes that this latest case of what's going on in Florida will move our country and move all the people in our country to demand some significant reforms in the electoral process to permit greater democracy to function as our founding fathers and intended it to function in our country.
Do you think this election makes the case against the Electoral College?
Well, I believe that the case against the Electoral College has been made many times in the past, very effectively, too. I think the basic argument in the against the Electoral College is a very simple one, and that is that if you believe that in one person, every person should have an equal vote in the president, and that that vote should translate and be aggregated to decide on the president, then you don't want to have an indirect system in which electors can make up their own mind independently of the people's vote, and that that outcome could be different from the popular vote. I mean, that's the argument in favor of reforming the Electoral College. Of course, our Constitution makes it very difficult for us to reform that particular provision of the Constitution because small states might feel that they will have less power in the decision of the president, and therefore they're unlikely to approve of such a reform.
My guest is Robert Pastor. He established the election monitoring system for the Carter Center and has monitored elections around the world. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Robert Pastor is my guest. He's a professor of political science at Emory University, and he established the election monitoring system for the Carter Center and worked with the Carter Center for 13 years. What are some of the lessons about elections that you've learned from supervising elections in other countries?
Well, the first and most important lesson is that for an election to work, the administrators must be seen as nonpartisan and impartial. Secondly, the process needs to be completely transparent, which is another way of saying that all of the key political parties should have an opportunity to observe the full range of electoral processes, especially during the count. If you have impartial administration and you have a transparent election in which the observers of the parties can watch everything, I think these are two very critical ingredients. The third one is an independent judiciary or an electoral court. A lot of countries have not only independent election commissions, national election commissions, they also have national electoral courts. These are judges with great wisdom, nonpartisanship, and professionalism in the judging of electoral law. Again, we don't have anything like that in the United States, but this might be one reform that we might want to consider in the future.
Is there an election system that you helped create in another country that you're particularly proud of, that you think functions really well?
No, I have not created election system in any other country. I don't know of any foreigner that has, but there are a wide range of election systems that have been created by their own people that should gain our attention during this critical moment. We only have to look towards our neighbor, Elections Canada. They are conducting an election right now, in which the campaign has been condensed to just 36 days, not 4 years, in which the amount of money that's contributed to the parties is somewhere between $15 and $50 million, as opposed to $3 billion, as we've just seen in the presidential cycle. We can look to Costa Rica that has an independent electoral court, which is widely admired by all of the candidates and parties and by most of Latin America as well. And also, its election commission is viewed as a fourth branch of government, equal to the other three branches, the judicial, the legislative, and the executive branches of government. So there's much that we can learn from other countries in the world.
You've brought people from other parts of the world to the United States to see how elections here operate. What are some of the things that the people you've brought here have admired and have been really kind of surprised at and disappointed in?
In 1992, we brought a group of Mexican officials representing the political parties to the United States. Our ulterior purpose was to encourage the Mexican government to invite foreigners to look at their election in 1994, and in fact, that did work. But the more interesting thing that came out of their observation was that they were very surprised that there were so few party monitors, that the regulations were actually so thin, that the process was so open, that at one point one of them said, this would be a very easy system to manipulate. And I asked him, well, why do you think most Americans have confidence in the electoral process here and so few Mexicans have? And that began a very interesting discussion in which we all concluded at the end that it was because electoral disputes and problems which emerge in both sets of countries were perceived to be resolved fairly in the United States. And that was not the case in Mexico at that time. They did not have, at that time, an independent election commission. They did not have an independent judiciary. They now have an independent election commission. They still have problems with their judiciary. So the comparison, both for the Mexicans and the Americans, was very interesting. And I think we came to appreciate both the differences and the special advantages that accrue as a result of an independent judiciary in the United States.
Tell the story of what happened when you took Chinese election officials to Atlanta to watch you vote.
Yes. Actually, in two of the last four elections in which observers have been watching me vote, I've run into particular problems. In the time with the Chinese, there was a runoff of a primary. They were just arriving at that particular time. And the election officials wouldn't permit me to vote for that runoff because they said that I had voted for the other party's primary. That was not the case. And I protested. And in order for there to be both an opportunity for me to vote, but also a learning experience for our Chinese visitors. And sure enough, the polling officials handled it very well. They made a phone call to Fulton County Courthouse and were able to ascertain exactly for which party I had voted in the original primary, established that they had made a mistake, and therefore permitted me to vote. So the lesson for the Chinese was every election in every country often has irregularities and problems. The critical issue is whether there is a process for resolving those problems expeditiously and fairly so that people can, in fact, exercise their right to vote.
And what happened more recently?
In this last election, I went and I was told that I had already received an absentee ballot and therefore would not be permitted to vote. I said, well, that was not the case. My son, who has a similar name, had received an absentee ballot, but I had not. The registration list indicated clearly, however, that I had received one. I protested, and the chief election official came over to me with an affidavit asking me to sign it, that in which he co-signed, which indicated clearly that if this represented a second vote on my part, that would be a felony, a crime, since I was confident that I had not voted as an absentee. That was certainly satisfactory to me, and it permitted me to vote. Once again, this was a good example. I brought my students to this election. A good example of that problems do emerge, and we in fact witness a great deal of irregularities on election day. The critical issue, once again, is whether or not there is a process for resolving this problem expeditiously and permitting a person to exercise their franchise. And in this case, it occurred.
But, you know, you're a special person. You not only know your way around the election system, you have people with you, you know, from other countries observing American elections. So you're going to be taken care of in a very punctual way. Other people might not have it so easy when a mistake is made.
You're absolutely correct. In the course of our election observation, we asked some waitresses at a diner, which we stopped to eat, whether they'd had a chance to vote. These were poor African-American women, and they said that they had tried, but they were not able to. And we asked what had happened, and they said they went to their polling site, and they showed us their election credential, which was very good. And they said their name was not on the list, and they were told to call a phone number, which they called all day long, but it was busy. And as a result, they were not able to vote, and a lot of their friends were not able to vote. But they also did not know how to work the process, as I did. So you're absolutely correct. I think this is one of these big problems. There are a lot of people out there. Usually they're poor, and they therefore don't know how to pursue their interests, or they're in poor communities, and it's very difficult to do so, that may have not been enfranchised, but should have been. they have a very low level of administrative development and a lower capacity to problem solve, that is to say, poorer communities do. And when that occurs, people are disenfranchised, and we need to correct that problem. My guess is that it occurs throughout the United States, and this is one of many different issues which we really need to take a close look at.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Robert Pastor established the election monitoring system for the Carter Center. He's a professor of political science at Emory University. Our interview was recorded this morning. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.